Next case is 001917, Leah D. No versus Edgar Smith. Justice Stratton is obviously not participating in oral argument, but she's read the brief, she'll listen to oral argument that's taped, and she will be participating in the decision in the case. Mr. Van Blarken.
May it please the court, good morning. Again, my name is Chris Van Blarken. I represent the plaintiff appellant Leah No in this case. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
At your time.
Insofar as this case has been fairly succinctly briefed and the court has the benefit of three appellate decisions, I'm going to try to keep my statements very brief. In this case, plaintiff appellant urges this court to adopt the well-reasoned decisions of the 8th District Court of Appeals in Burkholder versus Doe and the 10th District's opinion in Hale versus Scarborough. And we believe those cases stand for two propositions of law. The first being that in order to grant a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, the complaint must show conclusively from its face that no relief can be granted to the plaintiff. In this case, we believe that that is not the situation, that the defendant in this case failed to prove that there was no set of facts which would entitle plaintiff to relief.
What was the issue in that case?
In both of the two, both cases were identical to this case, where it was alleged that the statute was told by the defendant's absence from the state. And in both cases, the court, the 10th District and the 8th District, ruled that the failure to specifically plead the tolling statute should not bar the plaintiff from proceeding in the case and conducting discovery.
Did those cases, your opposing counsel makes a pretty strong point that there's nothing that you filed that indicated the absence from the state was in play or that you were somehow prevented from discovering that? Was that the case in both of the other cases as well?
In both of those cases, the plaintiffs were not permitted to conduct discovery. In both cases, there was not a pleading that there was an absence from the state.
Okay. And both of those cases, they sought the discovery?
Correct.
Okay. And is there something on the record here that you sought the same discovery?
Well, there was discovery that was filed. I believe it is reflected on the, probably on the docket in this case, of initial discovery filed. But there was no discovery to the specific issue of whether the defendant was absent from the state. The time that elapsed between the filing of the complaint was from October 13th to the dismissal on January 21st. And in fact, the plaintiff had requested, which is on the record, a chance to depose the defendant in this case on December 10th, I believe. And so there was a period between December 10th and January 21st which that discovery could have been conducted.
Did you request for the court to amend your petition to include the language?
No, there was not a request to amend the complaint. And I think in this case there wouldn't have been good grounds, and it may have been in violation of Civil Rule 11, because I do not believe there was sufficient proof to make that actual pleading on the complaint. I don't think that in this situation that the previous counsel could have made that allegation on the face of the complaint without further discovery in good faith.
Counsel, I guess I'm wondering along the same line, is if that's the only, I mean, that's the only basis to beat the statute or be beyond the statute, there has to be some mechanism and something that you put on the record that says, look, we don't know. We think this is a possibility. We know this. The case rises and falls on this. Judge, give us a chance to get discovery on this issue. If it's not there, it's not there, and we're dead.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be anything reflected that that kind of a request is made of the judge.
Well, yes, Your Honor. There is, in the supplement, the response to the motion to dismiss, there was a request to conduct discovery because of the exact issue. In the response, that they asked for additional time to conduct the deposition of the defendant to determine whether they were absent from the state for the 11 days. And, in fact, in the response, the plaintiff actually stated that they believe that that may be the case here, but they did not have sufficient proof at the time to allege it.
And that was done when?
That was done December 10th.
This case was filed when?
On October 13th, the case was filed. The other point that I wanted to make from the two cases is specifically that in both of those cases, the courts found that the mere fact that there was not an allegation on the face of the pleadings of the tolling statute was insufficient to grant the motion to dismiss without further discovery. So we believe that those cases are identical to this instant case and should be adopted by the court. In summary, the plaintiff appellant in this case would urge this court to reverse the lower court's decisions and to remand with an instruction that this case be permitted to proceed with discovery pursuant to a Civil Rule 56F. If there's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Van Vargen. Mr. Gall.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. First, I'd like to address the Rule 11 issue, which I believe to be a red herring in this case, for two reasons. First of all, because the very allegation that could have saved this complaint was made in the responsive memorandum. That is, that counsel for the plaintiff clearly said in that memorandum that he believed that there was some grounds to think that Mr. Smith may have been out of the state for the requisite 11 days. Rule 11 applies to that memorandum just as much as it applies to a complaint.
And counsel having responded, this is in a response to the 12B motion, I take it.
Yes, Your Honor.
That response. And counsel having given the trial court a tip about why the trial court's standard is to look at the face of the complaint and determine that conclusively that there exists no state of facts that would entitle this plaintiff to relief. And plaintiff having said, here's a state of facts, Judge, that may entitle me to relief, and therefore it's not conclusive. My defendant may have been temporarily absent from the state in accordance with Johnson v. Rhodes. Isn't that the end of the analysis for trial court under 12b-6 as opposed to summary judgment?
No, Your Honor, it's not, because the focus under a 12b-6 motion is on the complaint itself, the four corners of the complaint.
And so the court looks for what shows me on this complaint that conclusively that the plaintiff can show no state of facts that will entitle him to relief. And the only thing you're telling me is the court looks at the date of the accident and goes 2 years hence and said, this is too late.
Yes, Your Honor. Unlike in Vallada, the plaintiff really hemmed herself in by stating the date of the accident. And really the only alleging that Mr. Smith could have been beyond the boundaries of the state for 11 days was not the only way that Ms. Smith or Ms. No could have amended the complaint. She could have alleged, as in Vallada, that the accident occurred sometime in 1997 rather than stating the specific date of the accident.
We have to take it as it was. Here the plaintiff says, here's the day of the accident. He knows that. And then he said, but the statute, the 2 years is not a conclusive bar to me, Judge, because I may be able to show that the statute was told for a number of days. And therefore, on the face of this complaint, it does not conclusively show that I can prove no set of facts.
But, Your Honor, couldn't that very argument be made in response to any 12b-6 motion?
Yep.
Whether it's a habeas corpus?
And that's the standard for 12b-6. That is the argument, right? You say that therefore 12b-6 is not ever effective.
Yes, yes,
no,
Your Honor.
I disagree, but I think there, obviously the rule has a purpose and has been used successfully, but perhaps where this doesn't work for when the plaintiff comes through with some state of facts.
Although it would seem to me that a plaintiff in any 12B6 case could dream up some kind of state of fact.
Yeah, we're not talking about dreaming up here. It's a case that allows the tolling of the statute for temporary absences.
But couldn't the same argument be made as well if an element of the cause of action itself was not met? For instance, in a habeas corpus action, you know, unreasonable delay, or in an immunity case, you know, this court has allowed dismissal in some 2744 immunity cases. Couldn't the plaintiff as well, by taking the focus away from the four corners of the complaint, defeat a 12B6 motion in that case as well? I mean, I will not disagree that the result seems fairly harsh because
I'm not concerned with that.
Okay. But the you know, the fact is that Ms. No was invited to amend the complaint, which she can do liberally under Rule 15. And she didn't, you know, she wasn't hemmed into just pleading that Mr. Smith was outside the state.
If we filed the amendment, she would have to then go on and say it was told because he was out of state and didn't know that.
She would not have had to have amended it in that way. If she had simply amended it to say to remove the date altogether, then it would be possible to prove some.
Do you ever see a pleading when you know that an accident occurred on January 15th that you don't say that?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, in the Velotta case that this court decided, I think it was in 1975.
That was a bad pleading.
Well, perhaps. But in this instance where a complaint's been filed after the statute of limitations, that may become the standard of practice, and it's not that bad a thing to do. I mean, I don't think there's anything in the civil rules that specifically requires that one state the date of an accident in order for the complaint to be sufficient. In fact, if the court were to affirm this decision, it would reaffirm that 12B6 motions address the four corners of the complaint, and whether based on the language in that complaint, any set of facts can be proved that would allow the plaintiff to recover.
So if the pleading just said, this accident happened sometime in 1995, or April of 1996, that would be okay.
Just as in Velotta, yes.
Well, they should not say it happened on April 16th if they know that.
If they know that they filed beyond the statute of limitations and they want the opportunity to conduct some discovery. I mean, it seems to me that it would gut 12B6 if we're handing plaintiffs, you know, a new argument, and that is ask for discovery in any case where there may be. I mean, I understand the standard from the Community Tenants Union case and from Lawson Milk and so forth is that you there can't be any facts reasonably based on the complaint on which the plaintiff can recover. But again, the focus in that standard is on the face of the complaint and not on things that are out here on the periphery. And for instance, in one of the cases that Mr. Van Blun-Bargen cited, the Burkholder case, there was something that was presented and considered by the court outside the four corners of the complaint. In fact, as I recall, the basis for the Court of Appeals decision was that the court had essentially converted the motion to dismiss into a motion for summary judgment without giving advance notice to any of the parties. So it would seem that in this case, if you were to affirm, it would really have a very minor impact on pleading in practice. But because, you know, in this instance, as we've had in this exchange, you know, it would be possible for a plaintiff to plead more broadly so that the plaintiff, in that instance where the statute has run, could argue that there may be some set of facts outside the complaint on which this person may be entitled to recover. On the other hand, if the court amends in non-Bendix kinds of statute of limitations cases, it would seem to eliminate 12B6 motions altogether, and it would shift the focus from the complaint to things that could exist outside the complaint. In those instances where the plaintiff has specifically pled in the complaint a date that is beyond the statute of limitations. Indeed, in this case, even though it may seem a bit harsh, this court draws lines in all kinds of cases. I mean, the court requires that we file briefs within 30 days, file a notice of appeal within 30 days after a decision. There's a requirement that an answer be filed within 28 days of a complaint. Statute of limitations itself is a very bright line, but those kinds of lines are necessary in order for the orderly administration of justice. In this case, it makes sense for the court to maintain its current analysis and not expand it with respect to reviewing 12b6 motions, to look at the four corners of the complaint, and if it is clear from that complaint that the case is time-barred, then a dismissal is appropriate without having additional discovery.
Doesn't that somewhat beg the question, it is clear that the case is time-barred? You say that it is clear from the face of the complaint that the case is time-barred. And that's precisely my point. It isn't clear from the face of the complaint that it's time-barred. All we have is the date of the accident. That date does not show us that it's time-barred. It shows us that it's more than 2 years from the filing, but I question whether the face of the complaint shows that the complaint is time-barred.
Well, if the court does take that interpretation, then all I can say is that...
Only because the statute, the rule says, can prove no set. Doesn't say, has set forth everything. It just says, can prove no set. It seems to leave the analysis to the judge to see if there is a factor in the law that allows cases to be filed beyond 2 years beyond the date. Are there exceptions to that in the law?
Yep.
The judge says, yeah, I guess there is. Johnson v. Rhodes, that sort of thing.
Right. But by the same token, isn't that the case in any 12b6 motion, not even just statute of limitations cases? I mean, in, for instance, I think it was Fallon something, was a 2744 immunity case where this court allowed dismissal. There were habeas corpus cases back in the 90s that this court, in which this court allowed dismissal. In any of those cases, if the plaintiff thought up something that could be thrown in outside the complaint, or if the court can think up something beyond the four corners of the complaint,
it's just the import of the date.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the date of the same import that you think? The date is it. That's the end of the story. I suggest that the date doesn't give the judge enough information to say can't be proved.
I think your point seems to be that if we reverse, what we're saying is that in every case in which a plaintiff files an action beyond the statute of limitations, the trial judge errs in a 12b6 motion. The trial judge would err by not permitting the plaintiff's counsel to belatedly, I would think, determine whether, well, maybe the defendant was out of town for out of the state for some period of time, so we'll find out. But that's what this would open up, it seems to me. Is that?
That is absolutely it, Your Honor.
Brief,
absolutely.
Okay. Question for Mr. Van Bargen.
Oh, okay. Well, for those reasons, the defendant and appellee would submit that the decision of the Fourth District Court of Appeals should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Gall. Mr. Van Bargen, you saved a little over 9 minutes of your time. Let me start you with a procedural or a question about my vote on whether to allow the case. I voted not to allow the case for review in the merits, because I didn't see, looking at your propositions of law, I didn't see anything new. You asked us in two propositions to apply law that we had already announced. Isn't this an error case at best?
Your Honor, I think where it is a new issue is that the court has ruled Johnson v. Rhodes again and has brought that out, but that has not been addressed specifically to the interaction between 12b-6 and Johnson v. Rhodes. and the statute itself. And I think that's something that's still out, and there's actually a conflict between the different districts in this area as well, between now the 4th District and the 8th and 10th District. So I do believe it's an issue that's out there that has not been addressed by the court, the interaction of the civil rules with the statute that allows tolling.
Your worthy adversary distinguishes Burkholder and Hill. Why isn't how he distinguishes them accurate?
Justice Douglas, I think that from the facts of both of these cases, and just reviewing them, it was the same exact fact scenario where the case was filed without the specific pleading of tolling in those cases, and that they both asked in both cases for additional discovery but were refused that permission by the court. It was there a specific distinction, I guess, other than that, I'm not certain. But I don't think any of the distinctions would be relevant in those two cases from this case. For the record, I did want to point to the exact page where it was requested for additional discovery, and that is supplement page 6 and supplement page 7. Which is the memorandum in opposition of defendant's motion to dismiss. I want to go back to something that Justice Cook had been talking about and asking of defendant, that the statement was made that this interpretation would gut 12b-6, but in effect, the 12b-6 has a built-in provision which states that if something must go beyond the pleadings to turn to Rule 56 for summary judgment, it does not deprive the defendant in any case from opposing a motion for summary or opposing a complaint that has been filed untimely. It just requires it to go to and be converted to a motion for summary judgment instead, which would allow discovery for that additional time period. I think Justice Moyer had touched on the point that this would open up a gate of cases where they were filed beyond the statute of limitations. That, I think, really is a problem with the underlying statute, the tolling statute, something that has already been ruled to be constitutional by this court. I think this case, which the issue being addressed here, is really the application of 12b-6 to that rule. And that the 12b-6 standard, what should be applied, whether it should be uniform across the board for all 12b-6 motions or whether it should be different in this particular case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Van Blargen. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.